Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I love?
What do you love?
The 1982 movie Basket Case.
Yes, it's an excellent movie.
Yes. Instead, we watched Malignant. Baby got back. Baby got back. Little in the middle, but you got much back. Have you seen Basket Case?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
One and two.
This I've never seen the sequels, but this movie, it's just Basket Case.
There's a lot of Basket Case in there. A lot. It's arguably a what do they call it? A pastiche of other better schlockier horror movies.
Yes. Pastiche is a good word. You've done well. Way to pronounce it. If you remember that conversation previously.
I remember that we had it. I don't remember how I pronounced it. So
I don't either. And I don't even know if you mispronounced it. I just remember I just said it's in my short story. You should know how to pronounce it. And for some reason that struck me as funny. So Basket Case is a movie about a weird parasitic twin in a basket and they go on a revenge thing. It's not very similar, but it's pretty goddamn similar.
There are plot beats that are definitely similar.
Yeah. I guess the question to you, John, what happened? What is this?
So this is a James Wan, make a big horror guy making stuff like Insidious and The Conjuring and all those kind of stuff.
Like, and those are like real movies that make sense.
Well, he got this is a little cheaper. This is like a $40 million budget, and it seemed like this was one of those one for you, one for me sort of things where he's like, yeah, I'll do Aquaman 2, but I want to make this, which is like I don't like this movie, but I like that he did it. This weirdness is out there, but as a movie, I really don't like it.
I guess the question for me is, what? Did I already do that? I've seen a few James Wan movies, and I guess what I'm having trouble wrapping my head around is, did he make it like this on purpose? Like,
this is the thing
supposed to be a B movie, I guess, is what I'm driving at.
Well, and that's been the ongoing online discussion about this. And some of my irritation with this movie does come from the reaction to this movie. So
you're letting the reaction of an audience affect your viewing of a film. Doesn't seem like, wait, no, I just remembered 109 episodes of a show I'm on.
Well, it's also just like the hype, because I was really excited to see it.
Yeah, totally, a lot of
people that I like and respect were like, this is amazing. So this is essentially, we're talking about being this pastiche of horror movie. This is really mired in giallo films. Giallo being this sort of Italian, it started off as like Italian thrillers.
Yeah, it's like Ice Cream, but there's no.
A lot of black gloved killers, stuff like that. But then it started to get really stylistic with people like Mario Bava. Movies like Blood and Lace that are just like really colorful and pretty. And then it really started to move way more towards stylish stuff than movies making sense movies made by like Dario Argento that are just pretty bonkers and kind of have dream logic and don't fully make sense, but really just style over substance. But there's still stuff there. And he tried to do that. And so there's this amount of people going like, oh, no, it's intentionally bad. But the thing that stops me from agreeing with that is having seen James Wan movies. Like the opening is bonkers and the ending,
really,
like it's
weird. Yeah.
Yeah. And but it's very like kinetic and whatever. It seems like it's trying to be a certain kind of movie. And then the end is kind of goes off the rails a little bit. But in the middle there is a James Wan movie.
Yeah.
And all the weird misfired jokes, all the bad music stings, the unable to understand emotions and the stupid camera moves that aren't warranted. That's all James Wan. Yeah, I just watched Insidious. It's the same shit. In fact, I would argue that there's more bonker shit in Insidious than there is in this movie.
I mean, I don't know Insidious, but this movie, it's not the. I mean, there's bonker shit in here, obviously, but it's the purposeful B acting. And I promised the audience I wouldn't start comparing everything to this, but it reminds me of Gareth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Mm-hmm.
Like that beginning part is they're doing shitty 80s soap opera acting, and it's
everything,
and the
writing
is like
there.
Reflects that. It's so weird.
Yeah, and everything there, like it's at this level, this kind of high pitched thing, and I'm on board with it because the camera work's there, and it's all just ridiculous. Okay, cool. This is what we're going for. And even when we first meet the husband, it's so over the top. Okay, like fine, that's fine. But then, unlike his previous movies, where you have actual actors like Rose Byrne and Patrick Wilson. This, you have a bunch of stock photography models that you've decided to give lines to.
Yes.
And I understand he's working from a smaller budget, but again, if it's like, well, this is bad on purpose, there's tons of bad actors in other James Wan stuff. And the material is shitty, but you have like actors that can actually kind of like raise it up a little bit.
I mean, I guess I'm struggling with, it's not bad. It's a specific style of acting. Like it is bad, but it's bad for like, they acted the way that the director told them to him yes. to. I don't know how to describe that better than that, where it's like, I want to take the blame off the actor there. It's like George Lucas stuff where it's like, no, that's what they were told to do. Like mm-hmm. they just said, just do it fast. Do it like you're a marionette puppet. And that's what we want here. It's like, he's drinking the electricity. What are you going to do there? I mean, you have to read that. Like it's 1984 soap opera.
Yeah. And again, I mean, like the movies that this is drawing from aren't full of a lot of great actors. But I also think that's a cop out because you've made these shitty movies with actual actors before and it's been good. But if you're just like, no, I made a bad movie on purpose, you didn't do it well enough.
Yeah.
Like it just seems bad because I don't think he's that clever is, I guess what it boils down to is that he's this kind of clever meta dude. I've never gotten that in indication from any of the films that I've watched.
No. And I think this movie suffers from him not committing to the bit. Where you said, like, the beginning and the end are kind of batshit and weird, but then there's, like, a James Wan movie in the middle. If he had mm-hmm. just kind of kept that tone, it starts off bananas, and then it becomes, like, a jump scare. Like, it reminded me of the, what did you call it? The one with Booberry on the front lawn. The Conjuring. It reminded me of that, where it's just like, oh, this is scary because I don't like things jumping out at me. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to go back into being batshit. I'm like, oh, I kind of like this movie, but, like, I just had to sit through a whole bunch of... I don't know. I almost want him to try again, like just, but this time do 90 minutes
That's part of the problem with him though, is that like, again, like giallos are full of, you know, crummy acting or at least crummy dubbing, you know, nonsensical plot stuff and whatever. But as I said, there's a more sort of style over substance on these. And this is 100% the Evanescence version of that. This is the processed, like you would buy this at Starbucks brand horror.
Now, when you say Evanescence, you mean that band?
Yeah. Okay. I just mean I wasn't sure if that's a real word. But it's fed through this like corporate thing. He can't not be slick. And if he could just pull that back a little bit and like more judiciously use that stuff, it would work a lot better. But some of it was just like so overly slick. Like, even like the transitions of when she's in like frozen and like being transported to another place. And it's just the CG of everything melting around her.
Yeah.
That's just, that kind of took me out of the horror a little bit, where it's like, oh, this feels like more of a polished action movie kind of thing. Not action movie, but, you know, like a sci-fi thing. Whereas there's a little transition at the end of one of those where it's like this weird, like zoom in and the kind of the area behind her kind of like bows out almost like fish eyes. Even that just little transition was way more effective than all of that. At least for my money, it is more true to what he's trying to do. Indeed trying to do that.
So on that note, I was going to say this for later, but we'll talk about it now, is I don't think this is giallo. I think this is giallo as seen through Japanese filmmakers that use those tropes to make anime. Like the big coat that he is wearing later mm-hmm. and with the backwards thing, that is like straight out of like something from an anime that you'd watch. And it feels like, and that stuff was fed from those old giallo films where it's like, I think James Wan is getting it. This is secondhand information from giallo. And because it's like, oh, this is just a weird fucked up anime. It's, you know, that had a bad episode in the middle. Starts off backstory of the titular character. That's where you find mm-hmm. out like, oh no, the hidden village they're from has secret powers. And then at the end, it's the epic fight using leaf power or whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's what are back to being like Evanescence. It's soulless. It's through rote memorization. He's an unhorny Brian De Palma. He's just doing all these moves with nothing bolstering it. And so it's there's no base there for it to stand on and have this weird vibe. It just feels like he's just like, oh yeah, and then I use a red light here and a blue light here to make this look, and that's giallo. It's hollow, and I don't like it.
So I answer my question later. So it opens with the Simian Research Center we're in 1993, the year of our Lord, and the super cheesy bad dialogue is happening between these people. And I wrote, I assume this is for a reason, and I can answer that question, Alex, of 2 hours before watching the movie. No, it's not for a reason. It's just, I mean, I guess sort of it was, but not really. That's part where we see the kind of first like action sequences through like a door or whatever. But you get the doctor saying he's drinking electricity as if it's feeding it. Hilarious.
Yes.
And then the close up of the lady going, it's time to cut out the cancer. It's, I mean, I liked it. And then, then about 45 minutes of a this movie.
Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, like, I don't mean this in any kind of like, well, I'm a genius kind of way, but I figured out what was going on pretty much immediately. Like the shots of the monster gave too much away, I thought. And I know that's like the mystery isn't entirely the point for this thing, but I could already kind of go, oh, well, it's coming out of her back. Like that's
I thought it was a psychic parasitic twin. I didn't think it was actually in her back.
Well, let me put it this way. I didn't necessarily do the one-to-one of like, it's attached to this person's back, but I just went, oh, it's something growing out of that person's back. Cause they also like, because I think they said cut out the cancer. I just assumed it was like, oh, it's a thing growing on someone.
See, the narrative, face, what I had was, it was, they separated an evil twin from a good, like Hugo and Bart.
Yeah.
And what we're dealing with is Hugo coming back and trying to, cause he was gross and ugly. Right.
So like all there, the psychic stuff, I didn't put together, but I just, I did the same thing where it's like, yeah, that's Hugo.
We'll get to it when we get the reveal. Anyway,
did you notice the little cameo from Arrested Development? Patricia Velasquez. She was just a nurse that like slammed the door and said something. She was in The Mummy. She was the love interest in The Mummy.
I would know her from there. I don't know Arrested Development.
Oh, okay. Well, she's was in The Mummy. But yeah, it was a little cameo that I just kind of, it was one of those like, wait, is that? And then I looked it up later. And yes, it was.
And apparently the lady with the big glasses that works with the detectives, that's James Wan's I sent money to a foreign country to get me a wife. I'm very wrong about that, but it's something along those lines.
She is an actress, and she also is story by in this movie, and I think somewhat of a writing credit. And not a fan of her performance, or just that character at all, really.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the character, but I think she would. I mean, for what it was,
she's fine. But just that character is really
the guy,
really,
you know, annoying. Get thirsty. With the downside to this movie is there's no bird, so I can't force feed the word cloaca into the episode.
You did though, so check.
Getting it another way. John, how many times do I have to watch my children die inside of you?
Not enough is the answer. That was great. So she kind of, the main, after this whole thing happens, we get an exterior shot of the house. It's now present day. I hope you like seeing this house because you're going to see a lot of this house.
Now, John,
shots every 5 fucking seconds in this movie. Same thing with Insidious. Like the dude loves to look at the outside of a house, particularly when he jams a whole bunch of smoke at it.
Yeah, that smoke was hilarious. Like it is such a comical amount of, it looks like someone doing, it's going to be, what was the name of that? Like a David S. Pumpkins thing is about to happen. Where it's just this comical amount of smoke in front of an obviously haunted house.
Yeah, he cannot get away from haunted houses. That's what he knows. So he's like, it's got to be a haunted house. It's got to have fog everywhere.
So but you're introduced. Actually was haunted by the ghost of her brother that lives in her brain.
Yes. Our internal ghosts that haunt us day in and day out. But she comes home from her work is wherever, wearing scrubs. And her husband is in the bedroom watching the big game or something. And you can tell he's bad immediately because his shoes are on the bed.
Oh, is that bad?
Don't put your shoes on the bed. He's wearing his shoes on the bed.
Why is that bad?
You're tracking a whole bunch of, who knows where that guy's been? Maybe he has a job cleaning septic tanks and now he's on the bed with his shoes.
I sleep in the nude. My butthole's on my bed.
That's part of you though. That's the butthole that, like, what you have brought into bed is what you, like, that all's from you.
All right, so if I ate my shoes first, you'd be fine.
Yes, because your body would do the natural cleansing of the toxins in the shoes. Yes. But anyway, so then...
you went so right-wing. It's not only something I'd read on Facebook.
Look, it's my body, like my uncle. Choice to eat shoes instead of getting vaccinated.
Yeah.
She's not feeling well, so she turns off the game, and then he gets all pissed because apparently she's had a whole bunch of miscarriages that are her fault.
I don't mean to laugh at it, but it's comical the way that it's...
Yeah. Because he's so over the top about it. It says, I mean, there's no way you can write a line of dialogue that's like, how many more of my children have to die inside of you? And just be like, no, that's a serious thing that someone says. So again, like at this point in the movie, I'm still on board. Because I'm like, okay, this is knowingly stupid. And he gets mad and slams her head against the wall, leaving a hole in the drywall, and she starts bleeding. Then he immediately feels bad and leaves, and she locks him out.
Well, and he, then you get apologized and he went to get some ice. So, I mean, come on. It's
yeah, you know, he's actually a good guy is what that means.
I just the Scrubs thing just reminded me of how little internal life this woman has where I barely I mean, I know her name, but like she's a nurse or something. Like there's nothing to her other than, oh, I came home and now the story's starting.
But so then it's like that night he's sleeping on the couch, falling asleep in front of a TV or something. And then he hears a noise.
So I live in a creepy basement apartment, as the audience probably knows at this point. And I'm a furred of scary ghosts and scary movies. So the idea of something turning on in my apartment, because I don't have a cat or a baby or a loved one. I just, the idea of right now, like my Vitamix turning on is fucking horrifying. So this guy wakes up because his blender's going off, and then his fridge door opens. Fuck that. I want to burn myself down thinking about that. Oh, that is pure fucking fear. I was so happy when this movie changed into, oh, it's a physical entity. Because physical entity, I can get my head around that. I can't have spooky doors opening.
That happened to me once in my house growing up. Is this old radio that was I say old, it was probably like from the 70s or something like that. It was like the middle of the night. I was up late playing video games in my basement, and this old radio like turned on, and it was like my mom's, and so it was like religious programming was playing, and it was like, okay, that's a little scary, but I just went over and turned it off and it was fine. But it wasn't like, it would have been scary if it like turned on. I was like, and fire and brimstone, but it was just some innocuous.
But you had people in the house with you to protect you.
That's true. But they were upstairs and monsters move faster than I do.
Yeah, that's true.
But this was something that I found kind of irritating, because he is beset upon by this entity. It attacks and kills him. Hooray, it's killed that guy. We don't like him. But then when she goes, that she hears something goes down to investigate, and the thing acts like a ghost.
Yeah.
And it's just later when it's revealed, it was like, well, wait, what's the ghost thing about then? It just feels like he had an idea to do this.
I'm kind of an afterthought. Just because that was like kind of an effective thing and whatever. He was
shoving that. But it's just he's shoving a whole bunch of stuff together. And this sort of leads to my larger point about that. But at the moment, I was into it. I was like, okay, well, this is kind of cool.
I like that part, but I'm glad it ended, because I don't like jump scares. And this movie had a lot of jump scares for that point. But I thought that was super effective. His broken neck stance that he did, beautiful. The gore works in this, and we'll get to it later, are great. Mm-hmm. Like every time something horrible happens, it's great. There's one dumb gore looking thing, but we'll get to that when we get to it. So she goes downstairs and sees her dead lover that just beat her up, and then the creature thing is like walking backwards, spider walking, just it's horrible. And she goes to her room, and it knocks the door down from the outside. That's the part that went, that's a little weird, later when the reveal happens.
Yeah. Because it's the thing, because what is happening there?
I don't know. Because I can see punching yourself in the face. Mm-hmm. I could see that. But like, how are you on the other side of a door? Because I could see, you're imagining yourself on the other side of the door, but the door knocks you out. Like, it's a small thing, but that's the one that, like, the internal logic of it being one person imagining that, just the physics of it don't work.
Yeah, or was it that point she all in her mind or something? I don't know. When you want to compare it to these schlockier horror movies that they have something stupid like that. This is all, it's back to the whole thing of, like, so much of that was, for lack of a better term, was vibes, and that this movie doesn't have that as well, so it's harder to get on board with it.
Like there's, very much there, correct.
You know, like I said, there's a lot of dream logic and stuff in Argento movies like that, but it didn't feel, there wasn't anything there to distract me from it.
The next point I want to kind of bring up happens to be the next scene is she's in the hospital and her sister's there. So we introduced to Sid, her sister. Mm-hmm. This is something that happens frequently in movies that I find, whatever, I'm not the person to talk about this, but oh yeah, you lost the baby and now you're back to having a six pack. Uh-huh. Like she goes to touch her stomach and she has the, like, just toned tummy. You lost the baby an hour ago. That's not that, like, just it's a small thing, but it's like, don't do it, or at least pay the slightest amount to one emotional trauma that goes along with losing child. Uh-huh. She's fine with it. She's like, whatever. You know, an hour later, I'm over it. Yeah. Oh no, 2 days later, she stared at a window and she's over it. And then, but also just whatever, fucking toned tummy.
Yeah. Also, having never been, this is a point I really shouldn't be making, but I'll probably cut it anyway. But just like, oh, I'm automatically back at home where my husband was murdered and this thing attacked me, but life's back to normal. It's moving on.
Because her sister's like, hey, you want to not go here or I can stay with you? And she's like, nah, it's fine. It's my house. And I'm like, okay, I kind of get that. But that night at her house, she hears something, goes downstairs, and her back fucking door's open.
Mm-hmm.
Dude. No, I am fucking gone. Back door being open. Fuck you. No,
yeah.
I'm not going. You were even beyond a supernatural explanation. You were attacked in your house. And when you're back, your back door is open. So even if we're not in a horror movie, we're in a movie in which something attacked you. Like, let's say, I don't know, a guy in a hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
Your back door's open now. Don't be in your house anymore. It's like fine. be done with your house. Go hang out with Sid. She's got pretty princess dresses, which inexplicable. Why was she in a princess dress that one scene?
Because it's wacky and it's isn't that fun? It's you know, character building. She's a fun spirit, and then that's why she knows she's an actress, so she knows about like psychic stuff later. So when she talks to the cops, and then you know she can flirt with that one guy awkwardly, and I don't know. I also don't know why they didn't cast James Wan's wife as that role. Because that's like, just do that. She would have been fine. Is that?
Well, she's the moat leader. It's just probably.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
She was dressed as a princess. That's so fucking weird.
Yeah, but I think again, like it was like, wouldn't this be odd? And it was
it's not odd.
So I'll take it.
It's not odd enough to because they say like, oh, this. I work at the Princess Fantasyland or whatever. Like she gives an explanation. That ruins the whole, either just have her be as dressed as a princess for one scene and make no mention of it, or it's got to be a lot weirder than that. You can't just be like, oh no, I have a rational explanation for this. It is thus. Okay, cool. Why was that in this movie?
I think it'd be cooler if he was a clown or like Goofy or something, you know, but that way because she's the princess that, you know, she's feminine and pretty and good.
You mean Goofy, like Gorsh Goofy or like,
Yeah.
I would love to see her dressed as Goofy. That'd be great. She is back at her house at some point around here. And I'm watching it with the closed captions on. And you see this thing run. She's on the top of the steps. You see this thing run from frame right to frame left. And it says high-pitched shriek as it goes by. And I'm like, I think I hate James Wan as a horror director. We're just like, you're just making me startled. That's that doesn't take effort. Yeah, like you could literally just do a quick camera movie and be like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you, high pitched scream. Also, stop going to that fucking house.
Yep. We have to. But that scene you mentioned when she's like freaking out about whatever in her house, it goes to this like overhead shot of her. And I think that's now anyway. It's her like running around through the house and the camera kind of tracks her.
Yeah.
It's a visual reference to this movie, Next of Kin, that I think he lifted it from, which is an Ozploitation movie, an Australian movie that's really good and much better than this. But this is another example of like, so you did this, like you really just heightened it to this very bizarre level and then back down, like for nothing. Like you just went there for nothing rather than like letting it build to that or something. You just went, look at this trick. And even some like the more terrible stuff, like, you know, your Argentos or whatever, like they would do like wacky camera stuff. It usually was like when a murder was happening. This was just like a throwaway, like a fake out scare. And
it had the like that scene where it's going through. It's like a Wes Anderson movie where they've got just like a cutout of the side of the submarine or the side of the house. And it's got the same kind of whimsy to it where it's like, you're just doing this because you want to show off. And it works for Wes Anderson because like, everything looks like a diorama, and that's kind of what I'm getting across here. This is just, I don't know, I'm James Wan. I like moving
the camera. Like, it doesn't feel like part of a larger whole of what he's doing. It just feels like a look what I can do. And yeah, I don't like that. And it's funny because, so we're by this point, we're introduced to the cops, Kakoa Shaw and Regina Moss, that are investigating her husband's death.
I liked both of them, to be fair. Yeah.
She was the only one I really liked because she looked like a regular person. I didn't buy him much at all. They're investigating, and that's when they meet Sydney or whatever earlier in the hospital room. That's going on in the background. I also love she has a conversation with Sydney in her house about how like she was really looking forward to having a kid so she could have like a blood connection with someone, because she never had that. She was adopted when she was 8, and just that reveal, like that I am adopted, and then this big music sting. And it's okay. Like that was his big revelation that didn't deserve all that, but okay.
May I read my note that I was about to say before you started that? Adopted. Oh my God. Dot, yeah. dot. This movie is stupid. That yeah. was the moment where I went, yeah, it's not going to do it. It's not going to go yeah. back to the tone of that opening bit. And it's not going to get actually good. Like, all right. It's, and yet I should be, I'm being a little harsh here because I essentially enjoyed the movie. I wouldn't recommend it, but like it was, it, I wasn't mad it was in front of me.
See, I was not a fan. And I think it's an Event Horizon thing where if I had seen this thing for the first time in a theater, I bet it's tons of fun.
Yeah.
But just watching it at home, I'm like, I hate this. And I've started my yearly horror binge. And so I've been watching a bunch of shitty horror movies, but it's still just like, it's some of it, you know, talk about that, this whole Evanescence thing. Like it just, it doesn't have those rough edges that make stuff like that more acceptable. Where it's like, oh, well, you did your best with what you had. Where it's like you expect when it's this polished and looks this nice, you kind of expect something else out of it.
Yeah, I mean, this
you know, it's like,
yeah, I mean, and this is essentially a blank check movie. I mean, James Wan made Aquaman. It's like, oh, cool, I made $1 billion. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't know the backstory. We talked about this before, but like, this reeks of just blank check movie. They went, oh yeah, you want 50 yeah. million to make a movie? Yeah, go ahead. You just made us $1 billion. Of course, you can have 50
Aquaman
million.
Like Enjoy. Made like $1 billion.
Yeah.
It's going to be, yeah, they can afford to take this on the chin. What I love now is so we're introduced to this underground, the underground tunnels of Seattle.
Yes.
There's a woman there giving a tour there. And we have those in Portland as well, the Shanghai tunnels. And she gives a little talk about them. And then is after everyone leaves, she is kidnapped by the dark figure. And they did come back to it. And I'm glad because at first it was like, hey, what a neat location. Okay, bye. And I'm glad they went back, but when they go back, it's, but we'll get there. And this is the first example of me just getting absolutely furious at the score.
The Pixies thing?
Yeah, I think it's happened by now, but this is when I was really starting to like, just hate it because it, she wakes up, she's tied to, this woman is tied to some rafters in a creepy somewhere, an attic, I guess. With a fan spinning and the cameras, of course, upside down and moving around, whatever. And the soundtrack, yeah, is this big synth hit that's just like this little bit from the Pixies' Where Is My Mind? Like yep. in this way that you're on a bus or something and you hear someone hum that tiny little stanza of it. That's it. And then that's in your head the rest of the day. It was like just enough to be annoying. And it's also, again, not to just keep talking about giallo and stuff like that, but since this movie is supposed to be, I guess, built on these schlock horror things, is that so much of what built those was these amazing synth soundtracks and stuff like that. This is not that at all. This is this pounding variation on this Pixie song that's kind of just this one little stanza and that's it. And it also takes me right out of the movie where I'm going like, oh, it's the Pixies, Where Is My Mind? So something to do with her mind, like she's doing it, she's somewhere else or something. And that doesn't really pay off in a way that's satisfying and that warrants that drop.
The thing that killed me about it was one, they kept doing it, which was irritating. If it happened once, it's fine. But
yeah.
So House, the TV show House MD starring Hugh Laurie, its theme song originally was a Minor Threat song that I don't remember what it is. But it's Massive Attack. Sorry. I said Minor Threat. I meant to say Massive Attack. That was just my brain rebelling against me. Mm-hmm. And it's totemic. It is such a song.
Oh, yeah.
And I forget it was Netflix or Amazon Prime. When it got there, I guess they lost the rights to it. So they did a soundy-alike-y.
Oh.
So it was like I can't do it in my head because I have the Pixies stuck in my head. But like it sounds almost like the beginning of that song. And then we'll just like drop. So it's almost like that doon 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 doon.
Like, oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
But in this case, it'd be doon 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 doon. Like, and it's, you know, they're just stealing it. And that's all I can think of with this, where it's just like, you're just using that one bit. And I don't know why it is fucking me up. It's right. Like, because watching House on reruns, where it's like, no, just play the real song. You're almost there.
It's almost like the whole thing, like, don't put a better movie in your movie.
Yeah.
It's like, don't put a better song in your song. I just want to hear that song now. And it's also something that's been used a bunch of different ways. And so it has these other, like, connotations to it. When I hear it automatically, I think of Fight Club myself. I know that's not true for the youngsters and whatever, and the non-toxic males. Like, I don't know. It was such a bizarre choice, like so much other stuff in this movie, but in a way that I think didn't aid the movie at all. Like it didn't help have a coalesced vibe. So at this point, this is when we're introduced to the first kill, because the evil dark entity,
yes,
whoever, we'll just call him Gabriel, because that's what he's called. He in the attic thing he's in, finds a cool trench coat and some gloves. So that's settled. He's all kitted up now and is able to communicate through the radio. Cause okay. To this woman that's tied up.
Well, that's actually Elvis Costello's coat is the explanation for that.
Oh, that is. But about how, like, first we have to cut out the cancer. It's Dr. Weaver gets on the phone to call Dr. Weaver, the doctor from the opening scene, who you find out yes. now is at home in a lush, nice house.
Before we get out to that, this is going to get cut. I hope it doesn't get cut, but Weaver, all I can think of, and I know you've watched this movie with me, I think it was our first episode together. That's the name of the contestant on Wheel of Fish from UHF. Miss Phyllis Weaver! See what you want, Weaver! And that leads into the nothing, absolutely. And it just anytime I hear Weaver, and it's my fault, obviously, but yeah. It pulls me out of everything. Yes, so she has won a medical award, which is not the staff of Asclepius, the very sharp object of Asclepius, yes. with the yes, two snakes top. Around it. And that is Asclepius statue. The second you see it, you're like, oh yeah, there's no way in hell this is not in the rest of the movie.
But I will.
And
I
also
will,
I'm not sure if it's Asclepius.
But I will totally give them credit for that though, because then when the thing finally does kill her, it bludgeons her with it. Because it's so just like, that's look at this funny. Knife, look at it. And then it's about plonk.
But that's
so
also kind
credit
of
credit for that.
But also kind of a joke, because the next thing you see is the killer sharpening the statue.
Well, and maybe I missed it. Was that award for their research into this guy? Because otherwise you're wasting a lot of time making this thing into a knife. You said there's so many other ways to kill somebody.
It probably was, but I got it. I watched a lot of this movie, John, like high 90s. But there were parts like what I fast forwarded twice. Because like one point they're entering into something spooky. I think it was the hospital. They're like, I know this is going to be at least a minute and a half where nothing happens. And I'm just like, I'm not, this movie's not going to get me in any mood right now. I just need to fucking finish the thing. Around now. Yeah. So he kills it. And this is where we see the monster, the room swap keeps happening. Yeah,
more and everything up until that was actually pretty interesting, where she's just like at home doing laundry. And then she opens the laundry door. And then that doctor was behind cool. it. It's like, get out of my house. And it's this strange, disorienting thing. And then it's like, oh, okay, everyone's kind of weirded out. Let's just calm them down with some CG. Everyone knows what this is.
This is where we first get a clear view of the monster's face. Mm-hmm. And it's real dumb.
See, I like the design of the monster. Oh, I think it's gross. Yeah. Like the sphincter eyes and whatever. It's a little silly. The little Tyrannosaurus Rex arms are a little silly. But the face itself, I enjoyed.
The face part, it's just too gooey, and like the fact that it comes out of the skull, it's just I couldn't. This movie is not weird enough to have it come out of the skull.
This is the thing. So twice now, there have been times where she's bleeding out of the back of her skull. Don't worry about it. Like, they just hand wave it away when her sister goes and finds her, and she's on the pillow. It's like, oh, there's blood, and it's like a fair amount of blood on the pillow. It's like. Next scene, don't worry.
You know what drives me nuts? If anybody watches this movie, pay attention to how often Sid, her sister, starts petting the back of her head. That she fucking touches her hair more than I've ever seen. Like, she touches her hair on like hairdresser levels of hair touching. It's constant. Every time they're around, she's stroking her hair, like, motherfucker, that's where the monster is.
Just fixing her bad wig.
Hey, John.
But it's funny, but there's something to that. I had a friend that got into a bike accident when we were in high school. And like we were on the newspaper together, and like I have hurt his shoulder real bad, and I have touched him on the shoulder more in those 2 weeks following than I did the entire rest of the time. And it wasn't to be a dick or something like that. It just kept being the thing where I'm like, yeah, good job. And so I think there's the sign of trauma. She just wants to make it worse.
So here's the next part of this movie making a lot of sense. I'm going through psychic trauma. I have history of mental illness. She says it. This is all in my head. She's repeated this mantra. You know what I'm going to do when these murders are happening? I'm going to go to the cops with my sister and claim I have a psychic bond with a murderer. Yeah, that's one-to-one.
This is a moment because she was there. She witnesses the murder. And this was actually like when the cops are investigating it. I find it very irritating, the line. The thing where she's a tough old bird, but she fought till the end.
Oh, no.
Well, I don't like that. I don't know. That line really irritated me for whatever reason, just because I'm like, it sounded really stupid because no, she didn't. She got bludgeoned in the face with a thing. And
she fought back with her face.
Okay, that's okay. Fair enough. I didn't put it that way.
She's like a, it's like English footy hooligan. She like she was trying to break the statuette's nose with her forehead. No, because right now she says my favorite line of this movie is where she goes, "So I'm putting in a bolo for Sloth from the Goonies."
Mm-hmm.
I just like that because she's the only grounded character in the film, yeah. And she's like, "What am I? What do you want from me? What you're saying psychically? Now I have to put a fucking bolo out for a monster?" I'm like, yeah. Can you preach? That is exactly what you should be saying right now.
Yeah, she's the only one that is skeptical of anything that's going on, which I like. Everyone else is kind of like, well, this is weird, but let's pursue it. Because at this point, he has asked, Kakoa Shaw has asked this other guy in the giant police station, which reminded me at first about the police station in Bad Boys. But when I went back and looked, no, it's more. The police station in Bad Boys is more of a regular police station than this. The police station in I've talked about this a lot lately. But the Arkham City games was like this big, like cathedral ceilings and stuff like that.
I think I've seen that police station as a set before somewhere. Like that seemed very familiar to me, but I can't put my finger on it.
And there's a reason it's so open that we find out later, but that's fine.
Yeah, because I think that scene, there's another movie that does an action sequence in that space or a space that looks remarkably like that. Yeah.
But so they're not buying it, but they're still researching what like Weaver's files. Because it looks like Weaver was doing some research, and then we'll find out what that's about. And this was also a dumb moment where, and I'm not sure if it's here or later, but like he asks this other cop to like, hey, could you age this photo up? We found this like there's a bunch of mentions of this name in the files. Can you age this photo up? And then turns out it was her. Oh my God, he just let her get away. But
Here's the thing about that photo. I'm sorry, I totally interrupted you, but I'm going to keep going.
No, go ahead.
If you look at that photo, it looks a lot like that lady that just walked to the station.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, like not even like the age, it just, that looks a lot like, it just, yeah. From a detective it's not a big perspective, surprise. It's like, oh, this person would be the age of the woman I'm talking to right now. Same hair, kind of same haircut, similar facial, like, it's, but you could go, is this, I know you said your name's Maddie, but is your name Emily? Are there any VHSs that we could conveniently find and watch to find out your name?
Whole thing about that later.
Not those VHSs, because there's two VHS sequences in this movie. Because the first one, they find a VHS from the files, mm-hmm. where you find out that she's the lady from that research center, and then there's the other VHS sequence where from the research center. Because this movie's stupid. Yeah, I changed my mind. I don't like this movie.
I and this is 100% a personal pet peeve. I hate fake VHS. I can't stand it.
And this one did it particularly badly.
Yeah. Well, because it's like just you can find a shitty VHS camera. Just use it. Cause like weird VHS stuff to me is so much more horrifying. Like weird found footage stuff of VHS, terrifying. This is just a nice movie you put a filter on. And it's just it's very lazy. To me, it's very like it removes that kind of like the rawness of the original one if you're trying to use it to kind of create a scary thing. And I don't know. I don't like it. It's like having the disc icon still mean save. It just is. It's a hollow thing that kind of is. I don't know. When you just
shut up, John. Shut the fuck up. Oh my God, I've never been so happy in my life. The disc icon still meaning save. It is a skeuomorph. That is the word for when an archaic piece of something still represents something new. Skeuomorph. I never thought I'd get to use that in my life. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
It was worth it.
I have peaked. I'm going to kill myself tonight. Okay. There's no higher to go.
Yeah, that was it. Skeuomorph.
Skeuomorph. Oh, I can't believe I got to use that. And not even in a conversation. I can't believe
but
I got to.
You had it loaded. That's what was great. It wasn't like later you're like, you know what? I knew that word.
It's a word I was so excited about. And when I say, again, not using conversation, interrupt a conversation to scream out loud. I'm so excited. Anyway,
please. It was worth it. It was just me complaining about a meaningless thing. About. Just an aesthetic choice that I don't like.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I enjoy James Wan movies.
The next funny thing is I'm going, oh, you forget your past. Let's get you into a hypnotherapist. And a hypnotherapist is every major cast member sitting in a room as she's on an uncomfortable chair.
Yeah.
It is. That's not how hypnotherapy works in the slightest.
Before we get to that, I cannot skip over the second kill, which is probably my favorite kill in the whole thing. But it's the other doctor who didn't age at all.
You mean Dr. John Gregory?
No, not him. The this is Dr. Victor Fields, I think. That he's a research scientist that apparently lives next to a Kenny Rogers Roasters with that giant neon sign coming through there. And again, this feels like, it's like, yeah, I have this red light here. I'll put a blue light here and that's going to be style. The color palette for this thing is so muted and muddy, and I hate it, particularly for what it's trying to do. If they had gone like for more like brighter, sharper look, this, I would probably have enjoyed this so much better. There's a neat little bit here with him like traipsing around his apartment, thinks he's hearing things. And like when he closes the door, the being's behind, you know, Gabriel's behind the door. Just kind of classic horror movie stuff that I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And then at that, she has another, like, she wakes up in bed and she's Matilda or whatever her name is. Maddie wakes up in bed next to the doctor. She's like, oh my God, what the hell? And then she's transported to his apartment. And the thing is like on top of him, like stabbing him in the face with the knife thing it made. Which it was just brutal and vicious, and I
know it was that. Nice. I'm a sucker for scenes that take place next to like a awkwardly placed big neon sign. Like, yeah, there's the climax of the original Highlander is like that.
Yeah, but that's awesome. This is like a guy supposed to live there. Like no one was trying to live. Well, Connor McLeod was, but he also is a weirdo who's been alive for hundreds of years, and so
yeah, he tried to live for like a long ass time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So John, wait, you're saying the killer is your imaginary friend?
Yeah. But so they get to the, this is also the moment where, with the killer is your imaginary friend, where the sister is really fighting for her. And they're like, no, come, like, let's go check out this, where the murder happened. Trust me, the murder happened. We need to go look at it. And if I'm wrong, you can lock her up and put the cuffs on me. Oh, double entendre. Really? That's not a weird thing to say to a cop. Like that was such a forced moment between the two of them. Oh,
I didn't even pick up on that.
Oh, I just rolled my eyes because they're both just like very nervous. Oh my gosh, I can't believe you said that out loud. What just happened?
Yeah, you know what that is. What that was. My interest was kind of waning at that point.
Was already mad, and this did not help.
Yeah.
But that's again this thing where like in these moments as well, like you eventually find out that she was the patient at the hospital. And guess what giant music sting that gets? Nothing. Don't worry about it. It's not as important as being adopted.
They're in the house. The detectives, Maddie, Sid. This inexplicably, I remember a lot of names from this movie. Don't know why.
this one, out of all the other movies.
You know, I think it's probably because none of the act. I don't know the name of any actors. Because usually I'll just call them by the actor name. They're hanging out there. And then the lady that's been in that place with the giant industrial fan that was kidnapped earlier. She falls through the ceiling of Maddie's house.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a number of problems here. One, no house that looks like that has a big ass industrial fan in this. That's not how attics work.
Yeah.
That's nonsense. Two, fucking deal with that dry rot, babe. You can't just be falling through stuff.
Yeah. That didn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's been building for a while. And that's her house. She was proud of it. Fucking get that shit short. I mean,
clearly no one was taking care of the attic. And if they were, he got killed in the first part of the movie. So
the problem, rising damp, you know, it's a thing people don't talk about.
That's probably why he was so mad in the front. Cause he's like, you said you were going to take care of the drywall or the dry rot. And they cut that out.
Well, that's why he shoved it, her head through the wall.
Cause to show how bad it was.
Properly wet sealed walls would not have a lady's skull go through it so readily. Also, how weak ass is her skull that a bit of fucking drywall would snap your skull? One time I was drunk at my friend Rick's house, and we were having this there's a whole thing where there was a drama going on over email, and I was kind of part of the drama, and it was hilarious because this one guy was flipping the fuck out about nothing and we were reading the emails aloud. And then at one point I went, oh Jesus. And just exasperatedly put my head onto the wall and I went into the drywall because I was a little drunk. And like, but I put no effort in, and just drywall doesn't snap your head open enough to have your parasitic twin pop out. That's not how it works.
Well, I mean, you're putting
talk stress to a goddamn on a structure contractor before you make a movie.
You're putting stress on a structure that's not up to code in the first place. I mean, her skull has dry rot, you know? And plus, he's getting more powerful from eating fetuses, as we find out later, which was the only like really big reveal in the movie that I really liked, that concept of the villain, feeding off her babies. That was badass. But that again, it was
because I didn't want to like anything about this. Yeah. And I was like, don't do things I like. No, that's not true. I'm being too mean because we're talking about the part of the movie that blows because it's about to start getting fucking awesome for about 15 minutes.
I don't agree, but it does pick up the pace. So at this point, like they're putting the pieces together about Madison's past, and you start getting these. They go to visit her mom, her and Sid's mom, who I remember that you were adopted, and has, you know, there's flashbacks about her imaginary friend Gabriel being bad. In her hypnotherapy, she remembers that he was blamed for, she would get blamed when he would do bad things. And then she almost stabbed her mom with a knife. It eventually leads to realizing that the hospital probably still has files on her. And so Sydney goes to the hospital and the hospital is on a scary cliff and Sydney parks right at the edge of the cliff.
We need to talk about this for one second. So John, if we lived within driving distance of a massive fucking castle on a cliff, that's a closed down insane asylum. There is zero chance we haven't heard of it. It's impossible.
You know, a little secret. This movie isn't real.
It's there's no fucking way that you would live so close to a massive fucking castle on a cliff. It's impossible. Right. You would know about that. It's just a small annoyance.
The old Steve's place or whatever. Like,
yeah, but it'd be like if you lived in Edward Scissorhands town and go, wait, there's a giant Gothic cathedral on top of the cliff. Let me just look to the right slightly. Well, there it is. Oh, which you're saying there is a gorgeous drive near my house, near this beautiful body of water surrounded by lush Douglas firs and all sorts of evergreens near this massive closed down insane asylum. No, never heard of it. No, why would I know about that? I don't have anything to do ever. I'm literally an unemployed actress. You have plenty of fucking time to drive. Also, unemployed actress, that is a sweet ass car you're driving.
But this scene, I have a lot of issues with, in that you have, she goes to this hospital that was still functioning in the 1980s, you know, or early 90s, whatever, 93. Yeah. But there's all these like super old timey wheelchairs there. And like when she goes to the, like she's got a flashlight, she's shining around and there's graffiti everywhere. And there's some graffiti like really nicely written, that says, "Welcome to hell."
Yeah.
Like it's got some graffiti flair to it, but it's not like evil at all. It looks like, you know, you'd find it on a rap album cover from the 90s or something. It was very like, again, for this, like, oh, it's purposely bad. These are a lot of just bad choices that were made that just seem like not thought through rather than like intentionally, like, more like, oh, no, that's spooky. We'll put that in there. We need people to read it, but it's got to be graffiti. So we'll do that rather than try to like make it scary at all. We'll just have it say something scary because that's the same thing.
There's a lot of surface level stuff like that. Like when they're in the underground and there's an old carriage car, which I don't know if that's the right name for it, but the detective opens up to search inside and it is fucking pristine. Yeah. Like it is just, they just bought one new and just kind of half sprayed some fake dust on it. A lot of this movie has that kind of like, I'll just graffiti that wall or something.
Yeah. Which we completely, back to the carriage thing. We skipped over that third murder of Dr. Gregory, which just kind of happens. And you're like, oh, that guy was there too. It's the same kind of shit, but this time the cop shows up because he knows that that's on the hit list. And so he shows up and then, there's this chase scene that happens. And they go back down into the underground, and that's kind of cool. But this is where it really starts to lose me. I was already not having fun, but like the way that thing moves, and I'm not talking about the contortionist kind of work that they got an actual contortionist to do. That stuff was amazing, but like so much of it started to feel like a Marvel movie almost, or just some big budget sci-fi thing. Like the way it's moving through it's jumping around. I don't know how it has the ability to do that, but fine, whatever. And it just felt, again, like kind of too slick and neat. And when they get down to this big fog-filled carriage basement thing, it just, I don't know, it was a neat location that they didn't do enough with.
Yeah.
It was a neat location to have a fight at. And it was, okay. So it's around this point that they get the VHSs, the Sydney gets the VHSs from the hospital.
Yes.
And starts watching them and they realize that, oh yeah, she's the woman that was tied up in the attic was the mom, was Madison's mom, though it's Emily May, and she had this parasitic twin on her, Gabriel.
It's which again, so yeah, hilarious.
That's so basket case. Yeah. And that's all enough to be weird. The whole electricity thing felt like an afterthought, but it can absorb electricity, it can control electricity. That's how it talks to the radio, stuff like that. So you found this out, and then you get the story about how, well, so we decided to get rid of it. It was bad. But the thing is like, they're connected to the brain. So if we took out too much of it, it would probably kill her. So we just took out a bunch of it and then just shoved the rest back into her skull. Fine. That's dumb, but fine. However, you don't have giant scars because of that. There's not a, you know, really there's, frustrating. You know what they should have called this movie? How Madison Got Her Back Groove.
I mean,
but
like, yeah,
but like all like, these things, like you win, would never you notice. Win?
Wait, no. This needs to be addressed.
No, I'm trying to just move past it.
No. Just gonna say this now. You win. Way to go. Episode 110 or whatever this is. You win the episode. All the points go to you. I just need you to know that. But also, just for shame, John. For shame. Anyway, back to what we were saying.
Yeah, but just like that just seems like a huge thing to not notice. Or even if they just like cast away as like, oh, I fell off my bike when I was a kid or something. Whatever. But just so, like, I don't know. If I'm thinking about this, the movie ain't got me.
I had the same thought because I fell a few times when I was younger. So I've got all sorts of scars at the back of my head. Not like horrific scars, but enough that I never wanted to get like a short haircut in the back because it would just show like a big scar. And it's not even like gross or anything. It's just like, why show that off? But the fact is, I'm 100% aware of it. There's no way I wouldn't be aware of it. And that's like a small scar from falling off a skateboard, not my parasitic twin being removed from the back of my head.
Right. It's just a thing you don't notice. This also, in this line, also a great line of dialogue. Like a parasite, Gabriel feeds off Emily. Oh, like a parasite? Instead of, it's a parasite that feeds off Emily. Like, again, a minor thing, but if I, because the movie was so disappointing at this point that I was thinking about that. And then
also don't cite better movies from a couple of years ago.
But so at this point is where everyone talked about like, oh my gosh, this movie goes bonkers in the third act or, you know, in the final act. And I have seen horror movies where it's the bonkers bit is a chimp going apeshit with a razor blade. I've seen a dude turn into a living butt. I've seen Basket Case. I've seen, you know, Dario Argento ends all of his movies with a house on fire basically and just gives up the plot. This becomes a John Wick fight scene. And while it's absolutely intense and crazy, I was a little let down. I was a little bit like, oh, it's like how all Bollywood things need to have music numbers in there. Apparently we all need to have action fight scenes in all of our movies.
I don't disagree with you, though. I would just go back a little bit before the action fight stuff is when she's in the lockup. That's pretty weird. It gets kind of action-y, but like the transformation and the reaction of the other inmates, I thought was like, okay, that's actually kind of cool. Yeah.
The bit in the cell itself is real dumb. Like it looks like a set. Like, you know what I mean? It looks like a play is about to happen there.
Like that lady taking a piss was about to do a monologue about what happened in her childhood. Yeah.
But it's always nice to see Zoe Bell. I enjoyed her little cameo. Lesbian. She is a stunt woman. She's been in a bunch of Quentin Tarantino stuff.
Something just literally fell
off
the fucking thing behind me. And I blame you. Yep. And I'm going to have to deal with the shit all through October. And fuck this. And the audience out there, you better get your fucking friends to listen to this show because I'm doing psychological damage to myself. For the love of God, rate, review, subscribe, share the shit on social media because that thing just fell. You can't see me. I'm pointing behind me. That thing just fell while I'm talking about a scary movie. And I told John that if this happens, I'm going fucking ape shit. And it's happening right now. So all you out there have to understand that I'm scared. I'm in a basement apartment alone. No one loves me. I haven't touched another human in weeks. Fucking rate, review, subscribe. Anyway, John, you were saying.
There's never been a podcast. This is all happening in your head. I'm your parasitic twin.
Where is my bull?
So it's Zoe Bell and like this woman that's dressed like a 1970s blaxploitation character for some reason.
I kind of loved her. Like I was like a little in love with her.
But yeah, so at this point.
She should have roller skates on.
So at this point, this is when Gabriel finally breaks free. She's getting, Madison's getting accosted in the jail cell. They've arrested her under the suspicion of murder. And she's getting the shit kicked out of her by these mean women in there. And Gabriel breaks free. And this is great when she starts pulling off the back of her head and the face comes through and she's bending backwards. This was the contortionist work we were talking about. But then when it gets out of that and she gets into the police station proper, then it's just an action movie. And like, it's gorier than that. Like she's ripping off people's arms and stuff like that. But I was really just unenthused about this whole thing.
That's where the anime giallo through anime part comes. Is that sequence just screens of 1996 through about like 2010 anime, yeah. Like that kind of like Trigun and like Cowboy Bebop. And I mean, Cowboy Bebop is a little higher end than that, but like, it just, it kind of reeks of that. But there was we kind of shortly before this, mm-hmm. there was a somewhat good sequence in the part of the movie that they don't like, is they're interrogating her and Gabriel calls while it's happening.
Yeah.
And it's actually like, if it was in a better movie, this is actually somewhat of a tense, well, maybe not tense, but like an interesting scene, but it's in the middle of the slog part of the film. So, yeah.
And then eventually it leads to the hospital where the mom is recuperating and Gabriel's going to kill the mom.
Oh, wait. On the way in, there's a fun sequence here. The sister, Sid, is walking up to be like, oh, I have to protect my adopted sister's mother. And she talks to the security guard, and the security guard is like, oh, my chest, my pacemaker feels like it's on fire. And then his fucking pacemaker explodes through his chest. I grew up watching trauma films that made, that was good.
That was fun. He looked like the Time to Make the Donuts guy, and he blew up. It was great. So there's a whole altercation there. And then Sydney, while the bad guy, Gabriel kind of has her pinned with a medical bed and is getting ready to murder her, is like, mentions to Madison that, like, hey, Madison, he's been eating your babies. And that snaps her out of whatever reverie she is and gives her the power to lock him away, puts him in a fantasy world.
Hey, John, did you forget? We share the same brain.
Oh, I did forget that.
Yeah, which, that's the line they said in this movie.
Well, and that kind of revealed, like, oh, she's living a fantasy life when he's actually recording this, you know, performing these murders. That didn't feel like a reveal. And it also, like, the way it cuts, it seemed like she was doing a bunch of other stuff when this was happening. But it's like, yeah, we know that she's at this point that she's intruding. I don't know. Yeah, you figure out a lot of stuff before it's revealed in the movie. And some of that I found kind of boring. But yeah, so then it seems like Gabriel has won. But then, nope, she's locked him up in her brain. And it's this very exciting, well-thought-out black space with jail bars.
Well, here's the thing. Did you pick up on this? Is that at the end, there was a really awkwardly placed light bulb in front of the shot, and it started buzzing.
Yeah, was that Gabriel or not?
Did you get that? Okay, anyway. I'm not saying I recommend the movie, but if you're in the mood for, like, something that's on, that there's some fun stuff to watch in it. I don't think I... Yeah, don't watch it. Fuck it.
I
take it back. I didn't hate it enough to, like, I feel bad not recommending it, but yeah, don't watch it.
I just think if you're going to go down this route, there's so much better movies to watch this. Yeah. Like, go watch the stuff it's based on than the stuff that it's pretending to be. Yeah, go watch Basket Case. The sequels aren't any good, but the first one is just nightmarish and strange, and I like it.
I haven't seen Basket Case since about 1994, so, like, it could be terrible.
It's one of those, like, I stumbled on at 2 in the morning, like, for the first time on, like, HBO when I was, a teenager, and it just blew my mind. Which, I mean... You know, fair enough. And if this is your introduction to, like I said, if this is your introduction to this kind of stuff, go check out other stuff. If you liked the more bonker stuff about this, absolutely follow that rabbit hole and go see other things. If you're going to see it in the theater, if you can see it in a theater, I bet it's fun. Watch it with a group at least. Don't watch it by yourself.
Or just don't. I mean, at this point, we've qualified enough. Recommendations. There's a BBC show called Taskmaster. That's English celebrities doing useless tasks for no reason, and I find it very amusing if you're in the mood for light comedy. It is a very, very qualified recommendation in that you have to be in the mood for light comedy and English humor. But if you are, I find it, if I may say so, delightful.
Oh, it's delightful. Nice. I would recommend, I've been starting my big horror binge watch. This actually, Malignant was the one that kicked it off. But I've been watching a bunch of stuff. Like I already mentioned, Next of Kin. That one's great to check out. And actually a dumb horror movie that I actually had a lot of fun with. You know, it's not a great movie, but I had a ton of fun with it, was Final Destination. Some of that being a nostalgia thing, because it was 99 or something like that. But it's ridiculous. Yeah. And like weird, the villain is... death, like it's existential nightmare, but with a bunch of Rube Goldberg deaths, and it was surprising in ways I didn't expect, which is a dumb sentence to say, but I said it anyway. But yeah, I had a lot more fun than I anticipated going into it, and I'm curious to check out the other ones. I can't imagine they're any good, but that first one, check it out.
I've seen the first two, and I remember the second one being actually pretty all right, but I mean, I watched it like the year it came out, so.
And this is a very weird thing to get excited about, but when I was watching it, I was really stoked at how bad the main character's skin was. Like, he had like just a bunch of like little blemishes and stuff like that, like, you know, makeup over it. But it's just like, hey, that's a real person playing that. That's not Zac Efron. That's a human being.
Yeah. Hey, John, we need to watch a movie for next episode.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how you segue into this. And I'm going to say this. Hey, John, what movie are we watching next time?
Well, if following the theme of controversial horror movies, or at least divisive horror movies, we're going to check out Jennifer's Body, the movie of that title, not a actual body, written by Diablo Cody and starring Megan Fox.
Honest the Blog?
Honest the Blog. And yeah, this took a lot of guff when it first came out. I have never seen it, but it's it is, in fact, directed by Karen Kusama, which we did The Invitation. She directed that one.
Oh, okay. I fond memories of The Invitation.
Yeah, The Invitation was a near miss, but worth talking about. I've never seen a Diablo Cody movie, so we'll see if I can hack it.
Yeah, I like Diablo Cody on my chalupas. That is a joke for 1997 late night. Okay, we will see.
The back groove one doesn't sound too bad now, does it?
Yes, it does. Okay, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.